Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings to everyone from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the May 14th, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, indeed, we welcome you to another great hour of talking about our space program, our nation's efforts to explore space and utilize it and be educated from it and learn and even be entertained along the way. And it's a great weekend here as we're countdown clocks are ticking again, everything going the way they're supposed to go here on the Space Coast, and that is counting down toward a launch, as you all know. Endeavour scheduled for liftoff Monday morning, and we're going to pretty much spend the entire hour here today talking about that mission and what's to come and what's happened so far. And we're going to do that with the help of NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding, who I'll be very pleased to have on the show here in a little bit. It's been an incredible couple of weeks here trying to get Endeavour off the ground. We're going to talk all about it. And again, get you up to speed here momentarily. Our contact information, if you want to be a part of this program today, if you've got a question about the space shuttle program that you've always wanted to ask, if you don't understand the way something works, if there's a comment or question you have or even a favorite memory, let's say, about Endeavour, which I hope to share one of my favorite memories about Endeavour at the end of the program. Give us a call. Let us know what you're thinking. And when Jeff comes on, between the two of us, I'm sure we can answer just about any question you have about the space shuttle program and about our space program in general. Give us a call. The studio number, 321-768-1240. And if you want to send us an email, if you're more comfortable doing that, you can certainly welcome to do so. The address to use is spacetalking@AOL.com. We keep that screen up here on the computer all the time. And just want to invite you to be a part of the show, be a part of the program, and let us know what's on your mind. Because I think what you want to know about is more interesting perhaps sometimes than what we want to tell you. So with all that said, let me give you a little background here and talk for a few moments about NASA's plans here at the Space Center following Endeavour's final mission, following Atlantis' final mission, when the space shuttle program is truly retired and done with. And NASA has been, you know, the actual future is still so much up in the air. We still don't know a lot of details about where our nation's space program is going to go, what the ultimate destination is, if there is one, or what the next destination is. Does there need to be a next destination? There's so many questions about our future. And then depending on who you talk to and which destination you choose, whether you say you're going back to the moon, whether you say you're going on to Mars or just the moons of Mars or the asteroids, for example, no matter which destination you pick, engineers, different sets of engineers and designers will tell you that they would design their rockets to meet different needs, to fly to these different spots. It would each require a different need and a different look and a different set of requirements. And so none of this is coming together yet. It's all still up in the air as we have continued to wait month after month, year after year, for this direction to get settled. Well, a little bit of insight into what NASA might be thinking came via the Orlando Sentinel this past week. Mark Matthews out of their Washington Bureau had a very good story that kind of detailed some of those things. And the headline, NASA's $10 billion rocket plan recycles shuttle parts, draws flak. Well, of course it does. It doesn't seem like you can propose anything without someone saying they don't like it. And you know what? I'm not sure whether I like it or not either, but it's an interesting idea. And that is to take, basically, NASA has been mandated by Congress to come up with a rocket. Apparently, the commercial folks, as much as we're participating, as much as they're involved in this and doing a great job, and again, as I say week after week, you know, I'm a big fan of SpaceX. You know, here locally, they're proving the point for the rest of the folks to follow that commercial folks can do this. But yet there still seems to be this thing that says we have got to fly our own rocket. The NASA has to have its own rocket to fly. And Congress has said to NASA, you will come up with a design. And one of the designs they're thinking about doing is, just, again, and we've seen it before, taking shuttle-derived components, taking the solid rocket boosters, the external tank, and remodeling it and using it for purposes of flying our spacecrafts into at least low Earth orbit, if not beyond. And you know, the Senate has basically mandated that this design include these old components. You can say on the one hand, well, they're reliable in a sense, we understand them, they're designed. On the other hand, you can say they're 30-year-old technology, but in any case, I can't understand, and this is my own, this is my problem, and I need someone to explain it to me someday. You know, why cost $10 billion? Why is it going to cost another $10 billion to come up with this rocket? Which, you know, we've designed the solid rocket boosters. The external tank design is there. The space shuttle main engine design is there. The Orion capsule is essentially ready to go. Essentially. There's a lot of work to do yet, but we understand it. Why can't all these pieces get put together without spending another $10 billion? Now, I understand some of those costs are operational over the course of the next 5 or 6 years, you know. But again, I go back to SpaceX. I go back to what Elon Musk, the owner of SpaceX, wrote, you know, a couple of weeks ago talking about the cost of their program. And when he talks about how his total company expenditures since the company was founded in 2002 through the 2010 fiscal year were less than $800 million, $800 million, and we're talking on the NASA side $10 billion for a rocket that is essentially, we know what it looks like and understand it. And in this case, the SpaceX folks are starting with an $800 million plan for rockets that were essentially designed from a clean sheet of paper. Their Falcon 1, their Falcon 9, that money included the development and cost for Falcon 1, Falcon 9, building launch sites at Vandenberg out in the South Pacific, here at the Cape, launching the ones. Yes, there were some setbacks. There were also some successes. And you hold up that record to the way the government does business. And, you know, and maybe that's just the part of it, that we don't understand how the government does business. And then when you throw politics into the whole thing, it gets nasty from there. Well, okay, lots to think about, lots to talk about. We're going to move on to talk about Space Shuttle Endeavor with Jeff Spaulding, NASA test director. We've got a couple calls lined up as well, so when we come back from this first break, we'll take care of those phone calls, and we'll get your questions and comments taken care of, and then we'll be back with more. We'll talk about Space Shuttle Endeavor's mission here on Monday. That gets us going. Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back, everybody, again to Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. We're so excited to have you along with us today as we are in a countdown weekend to the launch of Space Shuttle Endeavor, Monday morning at 8:56 in the morning. Before we get to our guest today, NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding, let's talk to a couple of folks who have called in with some questions and comments. Let's start with Dan in Merritt Island. Dan, welcome to Space Talk.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. What's up?
Well, basically, I want to give you a heads up. Over the last 6-8 months, we put together a video, about 20 of us shuttle workers, and we got a lot of support from the crew, and I want to give you a heads up about it.
Okay.
It's called We All Do What We Can Do, and my friend Kenny McLaughlin and I wrote the song. We got an email the other day that had a picture of Mike Fink and another crew member, and the the divers at the neutral buoyancy lab at JSC.
Okay.
It's fine. And it says, we feel the same. And it's the tribute to the shuttle workers.
Where's it going to be available?
It's on YouTube right now.
Is it on YouTube right now?
Yep. If you search shuttle worker tribute, you can actually search my name, if that's okay. Or you can do, we all do what we can do. And that's kind of a mouthful.
Yeah, we all do what we can do, shuttle workforce tribute.
Yeah, and okay. The reaction's been really good.
Can you send me the direct embed link or whatever to spacetalking@AOL.com?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Dan, do that. We'll post that on our website, and then we'll put it up on Facebook and get the word out.
It's all internal. 20 people worked on it. And it's
oh, that's
big.
Neat. That's
so
neat.
We're proud.
What
proud
can I ask you, what area are you working out there?
I work in Tile, TPS.
In Tile? Oh, yeah. The Hightail Quilting Bee, I once called that area.
It's been a great career. I love it.
That's good. Dan, well, good luck to you and best wishes, and thanks for letting us know about this video tribute. We'll take a look at it. There goes Dan. Matt, Patrick Air Force Base with a question about the space shuttle program.
Hey, Jim, it's an honor to talk to you, and I really love your program.
Well, I appreciate that. What's up in your mind today?
Well, before I get to my questions, I want to add to something that you talked about, and that is my theory that the old can be modified to become the new.
Right.
As someone who was in naval aviation and went through many aircraft that were modified from Bs to Cs to Es to Ds.
Right.
And they became better. But my two questions are, has there been a downturn in the applications of people to become astronauts since our last two presidents decided to put the sword in the heart of the program? And also, have any of the astronauts decided that they wanted to go back to their old military jobs or some civilian jobs?
Okay.
And I will just sit here and tune up my radio and take your answers off the air or listen to the program.
Okay, Matt, I appreciate it. Those are great questions. I cannot tell you with absolute definitive accuracy of numbers, and maybe Jeff can in a bit, but maybe this is a good question to get one of the astronauts on the air here in the next couple of weeks to talk about that. And a lot of people are wondering about the astronauts. But in terms of applications, there's been no shortage of astronaut applications from what I've heard. NASA basically chooses a class. They have essentially chosen classes every other year. They hire to their needs. So there's a different number that's hired every year or every other year, depending on how often they need them. Do they need more astronauts now than a few years ago? I think the numbers are they've hired fewer because they've needed less. But on the other hand, a lot of the current astronauts, we're seeing quite a relatively higher number of news releases coming out these days saying astronauts have left the program to pursue other courses. So, and that seems very natural, and it seems to mimic a lot what I remember happened during Apollo, where some of the guys stuck it through. You know, Story Musgrave was an Apollo astronaut and never flew an Apollo, but stuck it through and flew a record number of times in shuttle. John Young, of course, a Gemini and Apollo astronaut, stuck it through the shuttle. So all that is there. I think it's a great idea to go and see if we can't get maybe, well, let's shoot for Peggy Whitson. Let's get for the chief astronaut and see what happens. And maybe we can get her or somebody from the astronaut office to talk about that. It's good stuff. So I appreciate that phone call. Let's get on to our talk about Space Shuttle Endeavour counting down to launch at the Kennedy Space Center. And one of the guys with his hands literally on the button to say go or no go is NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding, no stranger to the Launch Control Center and the Flight Control Room out there. Jeff, welcome to Space Talk. We're so glad you could take a moment and talk to us. I know you're out there at the office and busy working, but welcome. We appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks, Jim, and certainly it's a privilege to be on your show, so thanks a lot for having me.
Well, good. Well, look, before we get into Endeavour and its mission, I always like to get your background and share stories about how you got to where you're here. I know that you joined NASA in 87, graduating basically right out of college and I think coming right here to the Cape.
Yep, that's right.
I know that you hail from Illinois, so you're a good Midwestern boy like me from Minnesota.
That's right.
And that puts our ages very close together. Have you always had the space bug in you? Were you one of those guys that had to stay home to watch the Apollo launches?
I did enjoy those when I was younger, and I don't know if I really caught the bug until maybe I got into college, and I had some classes where we got a chance to work on some type of mission type things where we were doing some thermal design and some other things. And when I was doing that, it seemed like I really got a lot better taste for the space side of it. And I did some of that over spring break one year too, went out to Lockheed Martin and spent some time there with folks that had been working on the shuttle program. So that kind of enticed me to want to get into it.
You were more of a shuttle guy than really grew up worshiping Apollo.
Yeah. For the most part, I think that's probably true.
Yeah. Yeah, I know in my own case, I really loved the space program. But then in the formative years of high school and going into college, we were in that Apollo-Soyuz to shuttle six-year gap. And so the interest in space and the visibility of space really wasn't there.
That's right.
And then, of course, by the time it all started up again, it was a whole other story. Talk about what a NASA test director does. The position itself has got a storied history to it. But talk about what your job is in the Launch Control Center. And when we hear your voice on Monday morning, who are you talking to, and what are you worried about?
Well, we have a team of folks that are in the firing room that run the launch countdown, essentially. And I'm the one who's responsible for managing those folks, as well as putting together all the launch countdown particulars as far as the scheduling of all the work and activities and incorporating all the requirements that we have to do to get the vehicle ready to launch. And in addition, I come in on launch day with a few folks, and we're the ones who go ahead and load the vehicle with the propellants that we need to get up into orbit, and then go through all of the terminal countdown all the way down to launch. So it's a pretty exciting time to be there for the job that I have.
Now, and so you've got in the hierarchy, you've got I almost said Bob C. Can you believe it? You got Mike Leinbach, in this case, as the launch director. And he's essentially the guy you report to. Is that the line there? And then you kind of run the team below you. Is that the way to think of it?
And that is, yeah, that's kind of exactly the way to think of it. Mike's kind of the conduit there where he needs to make sure that the mission managers and all the folks that sit off to the side of us are all ready to go. And then he looks to me to make sure that the vehicle and the test team and all the requirements have been satisfied and that we're ready to launch. So he has that responsibility, and then he ultimately gives me the final go so that I can take the team and get the vehicle off the ground.
So you get, and of course, it's got to be one of the highlights in the morning or the day. You get Mike's comments to the crew, when the big poll takes place. And then don't you get a final shot at saying something to the crew before they take off?
Yeah, normally it's fairly brief, but I get a lot of time to talk to them, and a lot of it's done offline too. I don't do so much of the public side of it.
Right.
I have another line that I use and give them a couple of comments, usually on the backside.
So do we ever get weak? But I know we hear your voice, and so we're going to try to pick that out for us for everybody on Monday. So the NASA test director again now tied. Is the job tied directly to one specific shuttle? Is there a NASA test director for each shuttle? Or is at that point it doesn't really matter, you're handling whatever is on the pad?
We usually tend to alternate. There's two of us that are certified to do this, and then I have a couple others that we've trained that have also had a couple of missions along the way. This is actually my 17th shuttle launch as the prime NASA test director.
Wow.
So, I've had a large privilege to be able to be involved with that many missions, and I also did the Ares 1X launch, but certainly the shuttle side of it has been really exciting to be able to do that.
One of the things that I've tried to pull out of people in my career, because I know how different airplanes can be. You can put out a dozen Cessna 150s on the flight line, and each one of them have a little bit different characteristic to it. A door jams, or a heater doesn't come up as fast, or the light is burned out or whatever. And I always wonder what the differences are between the orbiters that give them character and personality. And do you see any of that? I mean, I know some orbiters had more reputations for being harder to get off the ground, but do you ever get a sense of the personality of a shuttle? Can you go through a countdown and say, oh, yeah, here we are with Endeavour, or Atlantis always does that right then?
Well, we do have some history that sort of supports some of the way you feel about them. I know Atlantis has had probably more than her share of rollbacks to the VAB, which we don't necessarily like to talk about, because we usually like to go to the pad, not from the pad.
Right.
And so that conversation comes up sometimes when we've had some significant issues, and she's just been in the luck of the draw sometimes as to where that falls.
Yeah.
And, of course, Discovery on her last mission for STS-133, which was her final mission, it didn't seem like she wanted to go either. We had quite a few things that took us quite a while to get her off the ground before we were finally successful. So you do see that in the shuttles themselves.
Yeah, and then very similar, I think, the story with Endeavour. And Jeff, if you'll stand by, we've got a five-minute built-in hold we're going to take right now to get everybody caught up on news, weather, and sports. We'll get more from NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding, including an introduction to this Endeavour mission and an update on the countdown itself. Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk right here on WMMB and brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, on the phone with us from his office at the Kennedy Space Center, NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding, one of an incredible launch team who have a reputation for pulling off miracles not only in the Launch Control Center but with all the engineers and technicians and managers and everybody who supports the launch team. Incredible group. And when we say the world's best aerospace workforce, clearly they are, and Jeff certainly welcomes or represents a part of that group. Jeff, let's talk about Endeavour itself now, and if you would just put on that hat of your NTD and tell us what's going on at the pad and how are things looking for a launch on Monday from where you sit.
Well, right now, things are looking great. We just opened the pad. We had the pad closed here this morning as we were loading up the tanks for our fuel cells, and that operation went really well, right on our timelines. And we're just going to keep working throughout the day and tomorrow as we're working down our path to get into our loading and ready for launch on Monday. But right now, we really haven't picked up any issues in the count. Everything's been pretty smooth. You know, we did have to work through that issue over the last couple of weeks that we had with, but all of that's behind us as far as our heaters and all those types of things. And so we're in pretty good shape. We'll be watching the weather, of course, as we go through today and tomorrow. As you know, most of your folks know, there's some weather rolling in here, and that always, when we get the lightning and some of the bad weather, that tends to slow us down a little bit for some of the ops that we're doing. But we generally look ahead and try to work around those as best we can when we know weather's coming in.
It seems like all of the things that should come up have come up and been resolved, and it's time for Endeavour to fly.
Well, that's where we think we are. We're going to go across the street here at 3 o'clock, and what we have is our launch minus two-day mission management team review of all of the issues that we've had up to this point, and pretty much the focus of that mission is just to put a final bow on the discussion that we had on the heater issue that kicked us out of the last count. So we'll get that done and behind us today, and really besides that, there's very little to talk about. The rest of it's going, you know, pretty much according to plan. And we have worked all bugs out, I think, at this point at least.
Were you able to find the smoking gun, as it were, for the load control assembly, or is this you think you've got a good part in hand and let's go fly as is?
Well, as we went through and did all the sort of the investigative troubleshooting that we do, we found what essentially is a nicked wire on a thermostat, and we kind of were able to correlate that back to an event last June. Where we did see a short and a spike in the current, so that kind of said to us, hey, there was a problem there, and the two events sort of looked like they were linked together, and so we believe that because we knew we had a blown fuse in a box that was a result of something with this thermostat, and so with all that kind of data, we went through and started changing out those components and doing some failure analysis offline, and really, well, I can't definitively say 100% that was what caused the problem. Certainly, it's the most likely scenario, and there's a lot of data and evidence that says that was the problem, and certainly all the parts that we had any issue with have all been changed out, checked, and tested, and we feel real confident with those.
Good.
At this point.
You talked about the weather. We know we saw some storms rolling across here in the afternoon. Is it still 70% go for Monday morning?
Yeah, right now we're looking 70% go. The two things that we're going to be watching on Monday will be the crosswinds, which are essentially, when we, from the runway perspective, if we had to do an emergency landing, the crosswinds are the ones that cut straight across the runway versus down the runway. So we'll be watching those because those will be kind of close to our limits, as well as cloud ceilings, which have to be at a certain height for us to be able to get off the ground as far as the clouds and things. So those are the two things that we'll be watching on Monday. But the weather right now looks pretty favorable with 70%.
Well, at least it's a morning launch as opposed to like a 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, traditionally, and especially as we're starting to get into that afternoon thunderstorm period, that's when we start to get some of those thunderstorms and things, and I think we'll see some of that tonight as well when stuff starts rolling in.
And we won't bother by talking right now about orbital mechanics and why it is that you have to launch when you do to get to the space station. We keep trying to explain that, and I'm convinced you can only do it if you've got a napkin and a cocktail in one hand and a napkin in the other. It's mind-boggling to think about the Earth and the rotation and figure all that stuff out. So, but you're going to go at 8:56 in the morning. When you get off the ground, I think the mission's been extended. I think you're up to 16 days now is the nominal plan?
Yeah, right now we're at a 16-day mission, and we have a lot of work to do, and it's going to fill that full 16 days. We only got two more trips up there, and we're really trying to do as much as we can during the time that we have. So we've kind of packed in as much as we can to use all of that time while we are up there with the full crew that we have with the shuttle, because that really expands, all the folks that are up on station and gives everybody a chance to do more of what they can.
Sure. And I know there are a lot of other folks that are much more expert into the physics of all this than either you or I, but can you talk from what you've learned about this this remarkable payload you're taking up, the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it, but like you, I'm not a particle physicist, and so a lot of it, it sounds interesting, but it's really, you got to be in that field kind of to really understand a lot of what it's doing. But one of the things they're trying to look for, when they look out into the universe, the scientists, this is the way it was explained to me, all the stuff that we see out there using our telescopes and all the other ways that we look at things out in the universe, we can only see about 10% of what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 90% is there, but we can't really see it or detect it. They know it's there because of the calculations they do and all the other stuff. So it's like, what is this, other 90%, and how do you detect it? And a lot of it they think is this dark matter and antimatter and other things that are out there. And so this Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer is just sort of a big, detector that hopefully will allow them to see some of this other stuff as it's passing through or near the detector. So that's essentially what they're trying to do with that. To the folks that have been working this project, they're comparing this to, it is the Hubble telescope of particle physics. So it's a really cool thing for them, and it's really important. I know there's a lot of countries and a lot of folks have been participating in this for a long time.
Yeah, I think a 10-year mission, $2 billion. I mean, it's incredible investment and sobering from the idea that Endeavour's mission is to get this thing up into orbit. It's so important for so many reasons. Every mission is, but this is a remarkable thing. Endeavour's last flight, of course, is the big discussion, and final flight, 25 missions. And I want to ask you about that, your feelings on the last flight. I want to ask you about it from the perspective of that I was talking with Candria Thomas at the press site today or yesterday, and we were talking about Discovery having come home. And just this past Tuesday, the Discovery was officially taken off flight status. So I guess that was tweeted. There was no big ceremony or anything, but it had reached the point of basically no return and in its processing and was taken off flight status. You're looking at Endeavour now coming back. Will it follow the very same kind of pattern of deservicing and cleaning and whatnot, and as it gets ready for its ultimate destination? What's the plan there, and how do you feel about that, all in about a minute of what we got left?
Well, yeah, that's what we're going to do with Endeavour, and kind of the feeling is, we have a great job because we get to see the fruits of our work. We get to, at the end of the day, we get to see the launches and absorb that, and you really get the feeling of accomplishment when you've done that. And this one's going to be no different, but you still have in the back of your mind that sense that this is the last time you're going to see her go
And it's tough. You know, it is kind of tough for a lot of us, you know, that have been working on her for a long time, and a lot of the teams that have been, literally been there since the beginning with her. So it's going to be a bit difficult as we get these ones out of flight status, and even more difficult, I think, as we start sending them to their final destinations, to the various museums and areas they're going to.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things for people to understand about, I guess I'll use the word culture of the Cape and of the Kennedy Space Center, is how close we are to the hardware itself. And I'll go back to my memories following Challenger and Columbia and Challenger. I was a student at Embry-Riddle, and I wound up giving the main speech at the memorial services, you know, on behalf of the students. And I talked about the loss of the vehicle itself. And then I'll never forget, in terms of Columbia, the ceremony we had on the runway, and then Bob Crippen getting up at the end, talking about the crew, but really talking about Columbia itself. We get so close to that hardware. And in this case, getting the hardware back and cleaning it up and then polishing it up and then saying goodbye to it, you know, my first son, we kind of kicked him out of the nest this week. He graduated from college. He's on off on his own. Yeah, we'll see him. We'll get to visit him and all that. But, you know, to send him goodbye, to say goodbye to something you've been so close to for so long, I think it's hard for people who don't understand that linkage between man and machine, how important that is and how special that is. And I know you guys don't get a lot of chance to talk about it, but we certainly do feel that for you and for everybody else that works out there, that this is in a remarkable time that we're living in. Of course, the other part of it, Jeff, is what happens to your workforce afterwards. Can you talk about your plans and the sense of what some of you guys in NASA management will be doing in the coming weeks and months?
Well, once we get done with our missions here, we still have the transition and retirement portion that you were talking about, which is essentially getting the vehicles ready to ship off to other places, and that's going to keep us busy again for the next few months doing some of that. But there's a lot of effort out here going in to working on, you know, partnerships with other groups and other agencies and trying to get other work out here, as well as looking at different programs. And there's a lot of studies going on as to what NASA's going to do for the future. So there's certainly enough of that going on to keep folks busy and engaged at this point. And, you know, it's still kind of up in the air as to where we're going to go, but everybody wants to be part of whatever that turns out to be.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Jeff, we're about running out of time here. I want to thank you very much for being a part of our program today. Do you get to attend the meeting, and then will you be in the press briefing at 4?
No, I'll be watching that one from television, I think. But I will be over at the meeting here in just a short time.
Escape that one. Well, good for you. Congratulations on everything so far to date. Good luck on Monday. We're all there with you. And don't eat too many beans when you get done. Jeff Spaulding, there he goes, NASA Test Director. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll reminisce a little bit more about Endeavour, give you some other updates on some things. And in the meantime, this is Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And we are so all about the space program today and every week here at WMMB. Welcome back as we do begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. Space Talk also brought to you today by the folks at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, where guests can walk beneath a giant moon rocket. And you can see a moon rock, too, as a matter of fact. See a space shuttle on its launch pad, at least through Monday, we hope, or even have lunch with an astronaut. It's all here to explore on Florida's Space Coast. For more information, hop online and visit kennedyspacecenter.com. Well, we thank, again, NASA Test Director Jeff Spaulding for being our guest today. He's working hard doing the countdown out at the Space Center. Took a few moments to talk with us. And just to run through the numbers again officially with our next launch segment, sponsored by United Space Alliance, innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. The United Space Alliance team, working with NASA and all of the other shuttle workforce, getting Endeavour ready to fly, as we've been talking about. Launch remains set for Monday at 8:56 a.m. The weather is 70% go, chance of acceptable conditions. Again, as Jeff was talking about, winds and clouds, the concern. The six-member flight crew is here at the Kennedy Space Center. They have returned from Houston. Mark Kelly's wife, Gabby Giffords, Representative Giffords, expected to be back here for this launch attempt on Monday morning, so that's good news. Out at the launch pad itself, as we heard, the fuel cells have been loaded. Those fuel cells are the devices that take liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen and combine them into electricity. And the byproduct, of course, of that combination, all of you high school chemistry folks, yes, that's right, it's water, and that's what they use to drink with as well. So that all going well at the pad. The mission management team that oversees the whole mission going to meet here at 3 o'clock, beginning in about 10 minutes, to make their final determinations as to whether or not they're set and feel comfortable with the final run toward launch. If that gets all approved, as expected, at about noon on Sunday, the rotating service structure will be moved away from Endeavour out of Pad 39A. That's that big scaffolding gantry tower that covers the orbiter, protects it in weather, and gives them full access to the payload bay. When that happens, then that's about noon. Then about 12 hours later, just before midnight on Monday, if everything continues to go well and the weather cooperates, the launch team will begin filling up the orange, rusty-colored, actually it's almost brown now, external tank for Endeavour. This tank has a great story to it, by the way. This is the tank that was very badly damaged, apparently, during Hurricane Katrina. When it hit New Orleans, which is basically where these tanks are manufactured. And that is a great yet untold story about how the NASA team and the Lockheed Martin team out there was able to take that external tank and salvage it and repair it and yet continue to manufacture other tanks as well. At a time when there were no homes to go to, families literally moved into the work site there and lived on the floor, and just all the hardship that went with that. Never missed a beat, never missed a chance to deliver an external tank, and never delayed a launch, to the best of my knowledge, because of that. Incredible story. Well, this particular tank has now turned out to be one of the older ones, and the foam on the outside of the tank actually has a property in it that it essentially, if you want to think of it this way, it tans. The longer it's exposed to sunlight, the longer it's exposed to the open air, it gets darker. So that's why a lot of times you see such different variations in the color of the tank, and it's so hard sometimes to tell you what color it is. It's because it actually gets darker as it spends more time out in the sun. So this one is noticeably darker, and again, it'll be just kind of fun for the photos. So filling up that tank a little bit before midnight, then that would lead to the crew departing at about 5:11 a.m. on Monday. Our coverage here on WMMB of Space Shuttle Endeavour's final launch will begin with the Bill Mick Live Show just after 6 a.m. on Monday. I'll come in and check in with Bill periodically throughout the morning through the first 2 hours. And then during the entire 8 o'clock hour leading through launch, we'll be on the air with Bill and his other guests, as usual, to talk about the mission and the countdown and keep you informed right up through the liftoff. So it should be good stuff. By the way, if you're wondering when the next launch is after Endeavour lifts off, that is going to be a Delta IV rocket as planned now, July 14th. From Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and it looks like it's carrying a GPS satellite, one of the navigation satellites. Atlantis' mission, kind of roughly targeted for late June, but very clearly expected to move into the mid-July timeframe. Whether it's just before the 14th or just after July 14th, one never knows. But the way, of course, it works here on the range is that all the launches bunch up together, so you can probably expect that the shuttle launch will be within 2 days of the Delta launch, one way or the other. So what else here we want to talk about? Well, you know, it was it's kind of fun. 19 years ago, my youngest son, Alex, had his birthday this week. 19 years ago he was born. And it was 19 years ago that Endeavor was in orbit for its maiden mission. So the two of them kind of came together, and we were telling the stories about how I was supposed to cover Endeavor's mission and go to Houston, and wound up staying at home for our third son to be born. And so here we are now, all these years later, and I don't have to worry about him now. He's off on his own. He's going to school, and we're going to watch Endeavor lift off on Monday for its final flight, 25th mission into orbit. And as we watch this program continue to wrap up, a sad time, and it's time to celebrate as well. So just a lot of difficult emotions going through this weekend for everybody. Let's see. Well, by looking ahead, our plans for Space Talk next week will largely depend on what happens with Endeavor and whether it launches on time or not. And if it does, then we'll have stuff to talk about. And if it doesn't, well, we'll have some stuff to talk about. But we'll keep our options open right now for the exact program plan. You can always stay in touch with us by following Space Talk on Facebook. Just go to Space Talk with Jim Banky on Facebook. Give it a little search. We are Space Talking on Twitter, if you want to do it that way. Or you can go to WMMBAM.com and use keywords Space Talk to get updates from us there as well. Space Talk is sponsored, by the way, by Space Florida, if you hadn't heard, and is a production of Myla Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer for Space Talk. We can't do it without him. Up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show, so please do stay tuned for that. I'm Jim Banky. We'll talk to you again real soon. Have a great weekend.